I'm going to call to order the Stanton City Council special meeting, study session, a closed session at 4 o'clock today. Roll call, Madam Clerk.
Councilmember Taylor?
Here.
Councilmember Van?
Here.
Councilmember Warren?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Ramirez?
Here.
And Mayor Shaver.
Thank you. Special orders of the day. Number three, we're going to be doing a study session with new business, and it's going to be entitled Homeless Within the City of Stanton and the Resources Being Offered by the City. This will be an update and discussion regarding steps taken to address homelessness within the City of Stanton and the resources being offered by the city.
Yeah, thank you. So this was agendized a few meetings ago by Councilmember Taylor. We put together the PowerPoint, which Sue King will go through today in the audience with the outreach coordinator as well as the Sheriff's Department. So if you have any questions about anything on one of the slides, feel free to raise your hand, interrupt as we go through this. A lot of it will be somewhat of a refresher to you. I mean, you know of everything that we're doing and the services that we're offering, but everybody is under one roof right now. And we can answer any questions that you might have. Sue?
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor and members of the council. This is a report on homelessness in the City of Stanton. An overview of the items that we will be covering, background and timeline, the current state, our comprehensive approach, and outreach and engagement, and the progress, and the housing progress. So the impacts on the City of Stanton is largely influenced by two U.S. District Court cases, one Martin versus City of Boise, and the OC Catholic Worker et al. Versus Orange County, subsequently the 34 city. In essence, the two U.S. District Court cases have really impeded the local government, specifically our city and the 33 other cities here in Orange County, from enforcing our own local anti-camping ordinances, unless we have certain obligations that we need to meet for an individual experiencing homelessness. They cite that this is a violation of their Eighth Amendment rights. So what we need to do is provide navigation center beds, outreach and engagement services, and enforcement. This is what guides us in everything that we do in terms of homelessness, and it is the parameters to which we have been under since 2019.
Sue?
Yes?
Go back, please, just for a second. Breaking down, I want you to explain to me the difference in obligations that we're talking about with number two and number three. The difference are the combination or separate entities of outreach and engagement services and enforcement by definition, please.
So we have folks here in this study session who could give much better detail information, but outreach and engagement services are those that if we do not have a navigation center bed, emergency shelter bed, that's not available for them right this moment at the time that I've encountered you on the streets, then we are to offer at least and document hygiene kits, a bus pass, perhaps a bus pass to back to reunification with their family, whether it's out of state or out of the area, healthcare services, behavioral health services, any other resources outside of a navigation center bed. So that's a secondary obligation. Primary is if we have a shelter bed available, navigation center bed available, then that's the primary. And then we could, if they refuse and we have the beds, we have the services, and then we could enforce. That's largely what we've been guided by for these past 3-4 years now.
So basically, who's responsible for enforcement?
The enforcement for our city would be our Stanton Police Services through the Sheriff's Department.
Okay, and how many motels or hotels in Stanton have we contracted with to provide bedding services if it necessitates itself so that we can follow and work with, under the Martin versus Boise, or actually Judge Carter?
I believe primarily the homeless outreach workers or coordinators are working with a motel outside of Stanton. They've been a little bit more friendly in terms of the bridge housing. I think that's what you're referring to.
is there enough of those so that if we needed to enforce our activities here, that we could find other applicable partners in housing or hotels or motels anywhere? I mean, do we have a backup game plan?
Yes, there are many service providers that do provide the bridge housing and interim housing, but it's largely supervised. That's the key. It has to be supervised.
Yeah, our first layer of emergency shelter beds will obviously be Buena Park and Placentia. We don't have existing contracts in place with contracts, right? Agreements, paper copies with motels per se. That's something I likely wouldn't recommend doing either. It's considered a magnet. If folks know we're offering motel stays, they're going to come and accept that motel stay over placement in Buena Park or Placentia, which we are paying dearly for. So worst case scenario, if we need to bridge somebody in a motel, we have access to motels, but we don't actually have, you know, paper copy agreements in place.
So that's sort of a fallback we have right now. Okay, thank you.
So this is our approach when it comes to, again, under Boise and Orange County Catholic workers. We do a daily two-person coverage outreach with notices from our app, our public service request app. We engage through the coordinated entry with help from our outreach grid bed shelter reservation. Assessments are taken, navigation support, and case management. The transition is a warm handoff, whether it's to the navigation centers and or other homeless service providers. And then the last approach that we have, if outreach, engagement, and transition is refused, is enforcement through our code, law enforcement, and of course our behavioral health deputy that resides in Stanton. So our Stanton daily homeless outreach coverage is Monday through Sunday, and you can see that each of the homeless outreach coordinators, there are two. On Wednesdays is when they are all available. And then our behavioral health deputy is largely Tuesday through Friday, but I do know that he does come on his off time to provide assistance. And then we also have the county's HCA outreach and engagement team, the Blue Shirts, 3 days a week. And we have VOLA, Cal Optima, the clinical field and homeless response team, which not all cities have. This is something that we were able to have access to. And then here are the other, several, but mostly we rely on these folks.
We can use bridges at Kramer Place, right?
Yes, but I believe it is a little bit more difficult than at least the two navigation centers, and our Hawks could speak a little bit better on that. There are times when bridges is available. It's not our go-to, but it is available.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of like a backup between the first two.
Yes.
Okay.
So behavioral health really is our mental health services. Healthcare is our medical services. Public social services is all the public benefits programs, whether it's Medi-Cal through Cal Optima or CalFresh. And then our community corrections have specific services that serve that population. And of course, housing, which includes our shelter or navigation center.
You don't have the Thoreau House up there, though, right?
No, that is families, largely for families who are homeless. And if we do run into, or our Hawks run into families, they are pretty rapidly housed and or access to a resource, unless the family is on their way from destination A to B, and they just happen to be here, usually in a car. So this is our point in time count in 2019. For the unsheltered, we're not looking at the sheltered numbers, but the unsheltered, there were 71 unsheltered individuals in North Orange County back in 2019, January of 2019. So this is going back to 2017, we have 53 unsheltered individuals in the point in time count. And then 71, And we're estimating this past January, the numbers haven't been confirmed, but we're estimating about 42. The point in time count was largely, actually it was led by the county, but it was largely led by our Hawks. And so they gave me a number of 42, yes.
How many of those 42 have we offered shelter to, but they're still here?
That's a very good question. I'm going to go to another section, and that may answer your question.
Thank you. I'll wait.
Sue, how many of those 41 or 42 are actually part of the 71 from a couple of years ago?
So that's a very good question. The city or this county did not opt to do a by name registry. So we don't have, these are not unique identifiers. Okay. If we did have that, then I could give you that answer rather quickly. So where are the homeless individuals in Stanton from? Any given day, there are 31 individuals here in the streets of Stanton. There are three from Anaheim, but when Anaheim PD enforces, that number goes up. Same thing with Garden Grove. There are about eight, and then that number goes up, a little under 15. Santa Ana, three, Huntington Beach, two, Buena Park, and then outside of Orange County. Yes.
So when Anaheim PD enforces, the numbers jump up in our city. When we enforce, if we enforce, what do the numbers look like?
That's a very good question. I don't know. It may be that we have just three, because if we enforce, then that means that people are scattered, they're moving along, and so that number could, that 31 could dwindle down.
So do we have any data on when our last enforcing?
I think we will have a slide that may shed some light on that.
Ren, do you want to comment?
Hey, related to the numbers going down when we increase our enforcement, that is, it is accurate, but we have not gone through the process of doing a day after body count, if you will. As far as getting the members of the homeless community moving and on their way out of quote unquote, I don't use the term encampment, but small gatherings of four or five folks, you definitely do see the benefits of that.
So we talk about where they're from and how many. So the hotspots, where are they? So here in the city of Stanton, we've identified four, and you could see the locations, Dale and Monroe, near the railroad tracks to Magnolia, the railroad tracks between Catella and Chapman, next to the flood control channels, and Beach and Chapman, and then Garden Grove and Court Street.
Sue, I'm surprised that Beach and Ball didn't make it.
That's not theirs.
But close enough, I'm sorry, let me be specific then. Beach and Star Street. I mean, I figure that's Anaheim, right? Things come from Anaheim.
Yes. I would have to say, and I think I know who you may be referring to. Those are the incidentals of two gentlemen, I believe. And sometimes when the enforcement happens, it didn't quite make it to our hotspot, but yes, it's it changes.
We don't typically have large numbers of individuals on the north side of town on Beach Boulevard, or particularly in the area of Beach and Star. We're obviously familiar with a couple folks in that area that will bounce around. I think what we tried to focus on with this particular graphic was more highly impacted areas, and then the magnets, if you will, that they are associated with.
Yes.
Railroad tracks, a little different than public sidewalks, correct?
Yes.
Okay, if they're on the railroad tracks, that's trespassing, and we have the ability to, I guess, both make them move, and we could theoretically arrest if they're trespassing on the railroad tracks?
Yes.
That shouldn't have anything to do with our agreement, the Boise or anything like that. This should be a totally different issue.
That is correct, and we have an MOU agreement with Union Pacific Railroad, who authorizes
us to enforce the trespassing on the railroad tracks. But just like ours, our policy, and obviously the agreement, they want outreach first, outreach and engagement first before we actually do enforcement. So it's trespassing is done with the warning first. If they choose not to leave, then we go ahead and cite. But it's led with the warning first, and then that's when they choose to leave. Same thing when we discuss enforcement, when we say that the city of Anaheim is doing enforcement, what that means is it's the same thing. They get the opportunity to actually leave on their own. If they choose to stay, then that's when the site is issued. Everybody agrees to pick up and leave, and that's how those numbers reflect what Sue's is stating, that they might migrate to us. That's when what the actual enforcement means, that they're out there doing the outreach and engagement.
If I may, are we at all coordinating enforcement with nearby cities so that they're not just hopping back and forth between cities and we're not bearing the brunt? Are neighboring cities doing what they can to lower their numbers? Is there any sort of joint enforcement effort, especially within the North Spa?
That's a good question with North Spa.
So with our central spa cities, Garden Grove, Westminster, CHB, for the fourth location, and I believe Mr. Wren could speak a little bit more about that. That has occurred.
So we do have connectivity at probably at different levels. I have connectivity with the city of Anaheim whenever they're going to increase their enforcement. As Sue mentioned, Garden Grove and Westminster are in different spa, but we have I have connectivity with the sergeant who leads their homeless program in the city of Garden Grove. They're pretty much the main driver of that outreach, and that he'll essentially let us know as a courtesy when they are enforcing. And then when that does occur, we essentially deploy all of our outreach coordinators, depending on what day of the week everybody knows to be essentially on in the area of Beach and Garden Grove. So we'll
What's strange for me is they're saying when we are enforcing, but shouldn't we be enforcing every day since we have the resources to be engaging every day? So that's what confuses me.
It's the question of enforcement. What does that mean?
Yeah. What does enforcement mean? Isn't that happening on a daily basis?
It is hard.
And again, that's what I mean by as far as enforcement. It's about going out there and making contact. That's what it comes down to it, making contact. What's our first priority? Outreach. And then engagement. And like I said, last thing is enforcement. So we have one dedicated behavioral health deputy. Let me give you an idea of what the surrounding cities do. Garden Grove has four dedicated homeless liaison officers dedicated to dealing with the homeless population 7 days a week. Anaheim has two plus a supervisor. Buena Park has two plus a supervisor. Westminster has two plus a supervisor. Cypress has four officers that do it collaboratively, meaning that that's their secondary job, but they're dedicated to doing that job. We have one here in Stanton, so he works 4 days out of the week, but obviously, like Sue stated, we have offered him an opportunity to come and work on an overtime position. All my other deputies are working and handling the day-to-day calls for service, which I've expressed that we have a high volume of calls for service, and so any other call that we get, and that's why I encourage every citizen to actually call if there's a concern reference homeless, because we will respond to that call. And we will clear it. It'll be dispatched according to what our call volume is, but we will clear it. So that's my, as far as outreach and engagement, I have one dedicated deputy who dedicates himself to doing that.
So you're saying that if a resident calls and requests service regarding homelessness, you guys will respond. But if they don't call, then you guys aren't proactively going out there looking for them.
Here's the thing. And yes, we will. Any call for service that a resident makes, we will respond. That's the direction of our sheriff, and we will respond. It'll be based on, like I said, the priority. If we have another priority call for service, and it's just going to wait, and sometimes that seems to be the heartache of citizens, that it's going to take a while because our deputies are tied up handling other calls for services. That's the situation. As far as you meaning being proactive, well, again, it's a fine balance of them having the time to be proactive on the homeless front or having to be proactive on the robbery that we just had, the shooting, the kidnapping, So it's a fine line as to what it is that the expectation is, because I have to answer to the crime trends when it says that my crimes are going up, because I have the robbery, the shooting that took place. Just today, this morning, we had a home invasion robbery where the actual victim got tied up. So my expectation is those deputies are actually being proactive out there, making these car stops. Hopefully we get that vehicle before they actually commit that home invasion robbery and we get to take them to jail, because they use a stolen vehicle, we found out based on our investigation. So it's a fine line. And do I dedicate them to doing the homeless when it's a lot of engagement and a lot of offering services? And the Hawks could tell you, it takes a long time to offer them service. And once they do offer them service, that's gonna tie up a deputy to stay with them to make sure we get those services to allocate it. And that's one deputy away when I only have four in the morning deployed to cover the whole city. Any call for service is gonna bare minimum require two deputies. That'll now lead me down to two deputies to handle all the rest of the city as far as calls for service. I commend Councilmember Taylor for actually doing a ride-along with my behavioral health deputy, and he got a chance to see the level of our calls for service and how I have to sometimes pull away the deputy because the situation calls for it, because my level of calls for services calls for it, that I need to pull them away to handle priority calls.
I can attest to that. They are very busy during the day. Looking at the police blotter, and I don't know how accurate that is. I barely even know how to get to it. But it looks like there's less calls at night.
Well, no. Like I said, our call volume is high, and it averages maybe within the last 2 years, it'll average 53 per day, a day. But you got to understand, like I said, my staffing levels is going to be four during the day. I'll have two that come in at 3:30 to two in the evening, and then the midnight cars is four. So, and like I said, every call for service at nighttime is gonna bare minimum tie up two deputies, just because it's at nighttime, it's an officer safety situation. So even though they may be less, I'm tying up for sure minimum two, maybe three, depending on the situation. Perfect example, like I said, that robbery with the shots fired at the south end of the city, not only did I tie up all my deputies, but I tied up all the north deputies. And I actually had to call Garden Grove to help me as well, just to try to stabilize that situation. Once it got stabilized, I was able to free up one or two deputies just to answer the rest of the calls for service. And like I said, I have, and we could discuss this at a later time once it comes to our financial, but we did a study just to track the north deputies coming into our city to help us, because we have a lot of priority calls for service. Minimum, you're getting a deputy for free. That's how much they respond to help us out in the city, minimum. And that's the example that I have to deal with. I have to balance, like I said, the high call volume with the staffing levels, and this is another example of the other thing that I'm also expecting them to do as well.
Would it be possible, and I've been thinking about this ever since the ride-along, if we either got some help from one of the other deputies, if we maybe one day a week we gave our behavioral health deputy another person, and we actually did what these other cities seem to be doing, working with our outreach coordinators, ticketing them, and maybe these people that have been ticketed already, I know it takes time, but maybe once a week we could do something like that and take somebody to jail. I understand they won't be there very long. They will be out relatively quickly, but I think it would send a message that right now we're considered the best place to stay in Orange County as far as if you're homeless, because we treat them really nicely. These guys are nice, Deputy Hicks is nice. We haven't, as far as I know, arrested anybody, but maybe we have, but not very many. And some of these people are kind of using our people in the sense they keep telling them, oh yeah, I want a bed, but not yet, or I need a bed for two of us or something. And my understanding with the agreement is they don't get to pick and choose their beds. We shouldn't be catering to them, I don't think, in that sense. But I do think we need some kind of strong enforcement once a week, once every 2 weeks, something where we can really kind of give them the same message Anaheim's giving them, for lack of a better term.
Again, and it's, we don't have that stats. When we say message, and I told you, I explained the enforcement, what that means. is that Anaheim's got two dedicated 7 days a week, and that's what they're doing outreach. So at some point, they don't want to be bothered, and they move on. I have one deputy that's dedicated, and I know it's a fine line. We try to separate the law enforcement component and the outreach component, because the outreach component is they want to for them to make the contact, and they want it to be a good contact. Anytime that you involve law enforcement, and because we've already stated that these individuals are chemical dependent and or mentally ill, and they see a uniform, that sometimes has an adverse reaction. So we don't want to combine both, and now we get no collaboration from these individuals, and they don't want the help from them either. So it's a fine line as far as trying to keep them divided, but at the same time working together to make sure that we serve the homeless population.
I find it really interesting that our nearby cities have more staff. Like Anaheim has two dedicated deputies, yes. Westminster has two, and a supervisor. But then when I look at the square miles, we're a really small city. We're only about 3 square miles. Anaheim is 50. Their population is way larger than ours. So I think per capita, as well as area, we have more coverage. Does that make sense? Like, sure, they have two, but they're, 10 times bigger than us, plus, So I'm not quite convinced that, they got one extra person, therefore they're doing a much better job. I feel like we actually have more things our about per capita, per square miles. We have more coverage.
Sue, how many unsheltered individuals in Anaheim?
How many unsheltered? I want to say the...
Let me pull up the point in time numbers.
Back in 2019?
Yeah, that'd be the last that we have.
Well, he's doing I just want to let Alice know, Gary and I, we visited every area of problem, whether it's graffiti, prostitution, transiency, the whole city, and it took us 1 hour.
Well, it's a small city.
I'm sorry, an hour and 15. Well, that's because you stopped for a soda.
2019 point in time count numbers, Anaheim has 694.
Wow. Yeah, 694. 694. Compared to 71 of ours. Wow. They got two deputies covering about
70. I don't think we're at 71. We're at 34.
No, I'm saying back in 2019.
That was 2019.
Okay. I'm sorry.
2020 didn't occur with COVID. And then 2022's 21's was January of 22. It was delayed.
But given those ratios, I would say we have more resources than Anaheim in terms of all those things. Put it that way.
So this was CityNet outreach and engagement and the street exit. So street exit is basically they're off the street in a navigation center and or some type of housing. And you could see from January of 2019 to January 2020, the number of, in the blue, the number of individuals that were out provided or had contacts for outreach and engagement services. And then the green are the numbers of street exits. Compare that to,
great presentation. Any questions?
Compared to that, to our Stanton homeless outreach coordinators, started in October of 2020 to the end of March 2022, the outreach and engagement contacts, and then the street exits there. And then if you wanted to have a much more focused referral of street exits. This is, again, the period is from August 2021 to December. And in that total reporting period, 69 individuals were off the streets and into these various placements. So it's not just the two navigation centers, but Bridges is up there, Yale Navigation Center, and various homeless service providers that provide specialized shelter and or housing.
Sue, could you go back one real quick? Please, thank you. Okay, thanks. When did we bring on the homeless outreach coordinators? Because they were phased in.
I want to say September, so all my years are kind of blending in, but I believe it was September 2020 that we hired Damien.
First.
And then subsequently, I believe in 2021, was then Angel, and then Guillermo and Maria together.
Sue, if we're at 34, go back a slide. We made 57 contacts?
57 exits, street exits.
Yeah.
So 57 individuals were off our streets and into some type of these types of destination.
That's pretty damn good.
Now, granted, right, who knows how long they're there? I think we have those statistics, but they could be at the shelter for a day. We know folks at the Placentia Navigation Center that have been there since they opened in March of 2020. That's where I put myself on the North Spa Operations Committee, myself, Buena Park, Placentia, and Brea, to work through those issues. Is why are they still at the shelters 2 years later when the standard operating procedures at the shelters only call for a maximum of up to 180 day stay?
Because they're supposed to move to the supportive housing.
And that's kind of that circle, right?
Okay.
Yes. We can talk about it in one of the next slides, but that is what we're trying to solve.
When we drill down the healthcare services of our outreach and engagement services, we have behavioral health and general health care. So you could see that behavioral health, there were 5 individuals that received this, and then 18 received general health care. And this is, again, August 2021 to December 2021.
We don't contract with CityNet anymore, do we?
No, we don't. We have our HOC.
Yeah, that was money wasted.
So this is the Stanton Police Services through the Sheriff's Department. Homeless and mental health related calls from July 1st of 2021 to the end of February, 1,029 calls related to homeless and mental health. The behavioral health deputy, the enforcement data from January of this year to almost the end of March, there were 15 citations and 9 arrests. And then when you look at the placements from the behavioral health, and I know that Mr. Taylor was talking about Be Well, there were 14 individuals that were sent to hospitals and or some type of behavioral health settings, and 8 of them went to Be Well. And again, from January 1st, 2022 to April 5th.
Sue, let's go to the second one down. Of those 15 citations, how many of them were issued to transients that wouldn't leave the city?
That's likely better answered by Captain Alday.
I could give you even more current data. There was at least minimum of 10 municipal code trespassing citations. Like we've discussed in the past, we've discussed this with BBK, was the challenge of if we went the Penal Code trespassing site, it wasn't even filed. So we decided to, along with BBK, to go the municipal code violation route. And so minimum, we've done the trespassing 10. And like I told you, whether it's municipal code or Penal Code, the first thing as far as the elements, it's you have to give them a warning. That's the first thing. Once, if you come back after you gave them a warning, they're still there, then now you could go and enforce.
Okay, that brings up my next question. Thank you for that, Chief. On Cerritos Avenue, at the top of the OCTA right away on the street there in that area, there's a guy's been living there for 2 years. Do any of you guys know who we're talking about? I call him Mario because he looks like the Mario character.
But we all know him, yes.
Okay. Why is he there? Why is he still there? He's been there 2 years, and I am so tired of my neighbors calling me and asking me why he sleeps in a tent on the street, on the sidewalk, and trashes the area every day. How can a guy be there for 2 years?
He is routinely service resistant, and he is contacted multiple times per week by city staff.
So why don't we arrest him? Why don't we arrest him?
Again, a question probably better answered by Captain Alday.
Why don't we arrest him?
Is that our jurisdiction? Or is that OCTA?
Oh, yeah, he's right there on the sidewalk.
I don't have Deputy Hicks here to speak on his behalf, but I'm sure he's made contact with them as well. Is that correct?
Okay, let's go to number 2. Okay.
I'm sorry, go ahead. And
So you, did you tell the sheriff's department that? And how many times have you told them?
Oh, gee, it's probably every week.
Just a minute, Yuri. How many? But more than once, right?
Is this McCoy?
Routinely?
We'll get you that answer right now with Deputy Hicks.
Okay, on the bus stop up here on Western and Catella, the guy's been living there for 4 months at the bus stop. How come?
Individual is someone that we do engage with routinely. He suffers from some pretty serious mental issues. He has historically been service resistant. He did live across the street here for quite a while with the caretaker. The caretaker passed, and he has been essentially on the street, but very near to City Hall since that time. As far as the outreach coordinators go, they have the history on him. They've helped him kind of get back on his feet in different forms related to healthcare, et cetera. But he has been service resistant in terms of taking the next step from a housing standpoint.
Yeah, so we have a guy that's mentally ill. I know that for a fact because he thinks he's a billionaire. That's living in a bus stop on our street, on a main street, for 4 months, and we haven't done anything about it. That's ridiculous. What do you think the public's thinking of us right now? Another fact, we get calls every day from the people living in that apartment complex right next door. People don't want to buy gas there, probably because it's too expensive, because he's always panhandling them, okay? Now, what about the lady and the family up on Court and Garden Grove by the old food truck? She's been there for months. You know her, right?
Jennifer.
Why is she still there? Why is her family camped on the street? I mean, what's going on here?
We conducted a major cleanup in that area today.
Have you turned that over to the sheriff's department about that corner?
Yeah.
And what happened? Is she still there? Because I saw her there a couple of days ago.
They did ticket her.
Huh?
They ticketed her. They gave her a ticket.
Okay, she's still there.
That was the day I called on that same Tuesday. I was out looking, and then
Gary,
went
she's
out
been
later.
Here for months.
No, I know. No, I'm just saying. I know she's had one ticket, at least, maybe more. So they have approached her, but that's what I'm saying. I think we have to have some way where we can take these people at some point, interrupt their lives, and actually incarcerate them. I know it's only going to be a few hours, but they're going to lose their stuff. Their stuff is, I'm not lose it, but it's going to go to the yard. They're going to have to go downtown, get fingerprinted, all that. They'll be out pretty quickly, but this would cause, it would change their lives a little bit. They wouldn't be into this routine all the time. We have to have some kind of enforcement. Some kind of stick. We've got a very good carrot. These guys are offering them over and over again, and we're telling them, we're giving them choices, which I don't think we should be doing on the shelters. They should get a chance for a shelter, and then we need to enforce. But maybe we don't have enough people to do everything, but I think we could figure something out where we could arrest some of these people, these ones that have been here for a long time.
And I think
the ones on the bus stops, I think if they were arrested, they might end up being taken into a hospital, and that would get them off the street for a while too, because I think those two are both crazy.
Chief, how many citations have we issued to transient people in the last 3 years since we've had this influx?
In the last 3 years, I would have to go back and get that data for you. I don't have that data available.
Okay, right
here.
Now we're averaging three a month.
But here's the thing, though. You and I know that they're transient, and just because they're sitting on the sidewalk and they're not impeding the sidewalk, as you remember when they did that on Monroe and they actually drew the line, as long as they're not impeding the public and it's minimum 36 inches, there's nothing I could do because it's a public roadway or walkway. Unless we actually have the illegal tent set up where actually now we could go in and enforce the illegal camping, we could offer the services, but what am I going to arrest them for?
Anti-camping.
If that's there, the elements are there where
Does
they actually have
the kid have to be there, or can they just be sleeping on a sleeping bag or something?
They actually have to have that in that paraphernalia. But if they don't, and they're just laying on the sidewalk or sitting on the sidewalk, and they're not impeding, there's nothing that I could enforce. And I think you saw a little bit of that, and they were able to explain that to you.
Yes,
you and I know that they're absolutely homeless all day long, but I can't enforce the illegal camping. I can't enforce the trespassing. So what am I going to enforce other than give them exact outreach and engagement? Even these same individuals that the mayor just spoke about, that they know they're resistant. They know the law just as well as we do. And so when we come along, there's nothing that directs me or I have the elements to give them any type of ticket for, so they get up and go. And the evenings, like I said, Sue will cover it, we have the challenge with our deputies in the evenings because of we have to be able to find out that there is a bed available in the evenings and that these reception locations will take them. Those are not available in the evenings, and that's a challenge if we're going to do any type of enforcement in the evenings. So we can't.
Mr. Wren, are beds available in the evening?
It's extraordinarily limited in the evening.
How do we solve that problem?
I, to be honest with you, I don't know if there is a direct solution to that based on the safety component and the numbers related to the homeless outreach coordinators. In the past, what has been done when an individual actually expressed a willingness to accept shelter, that individual was essentially told to stand put, and then connectivity with the sheriff's department would lead us there first thing in the morning. In the past, that was done on occasion. Maybe once a month, I would get a call from an overnight deputy who had been given my contact information, and for example, would say there's an individual located near the Family Resource Center who is interested in shelter, and as soon as we could get a body to her essentially by 6:30 in the morning. But there is a dead period. If somebody wants to accept shelter at 2 in the morning, there's not a clean mechanism at this point to make that happen. But it also is pretty rare.
Have we tried to talk to the shelters maybe in a coordinated effort we're going to be enforcing on this particular night? And maybe the two navigational shelters could have somebody on?
I mean, that's something we could explore. I think something I would like to highlight is the extraordinarily high percentage of service-resistant individuals. So if you look at the folks on the one slide, when you talked about the number of contacts as related to the number of placements, and based on, thanks to council, having the four outreach coordinators, I think it's highly unlikely that we contact somebody in the middle of the night for the first time. We're catching them all through during the day, and not to be, rude. If we've offered them 9 times and they decide on the 10th that they're ready to go at 3 in the morning, they can wait till 8. So,
Mr. Wayne, I totally
agree.
The idea is we have to have the beds available, or he can't act.
100%.
What I'm saying is, if the beds are available, they refuse, he can do something. Maybe one night every 2 weeks. I don't know. We have to have something.
I totally agree.
Stick to this carrot.
The refusal, I mean, best case scenario at night is that the refusal would lead to enforcement, not necessarily an arrest, but having that individual move on. Experience-wise, those contacted in the middle of the night typically aren't seeking shelter.
The thing about that messes up their routine. One thing they do not like is their routine messed up. They like to use their drugs. They sit there when they want to. They want their life, their freedom. But if we mess up the routine, maybe they'll go someplace else.
You're exactly right. And one of the things on the front end of this issue, when related to the settlement agreement, and I use the term somewhat respectfully, when they shipped the pros in and we had the full encampments, we developed a system where we could electronically tag where we made contact with the individual, store their items appropriately, and you're exactly right that they do not like they don't like having to come across town and come to the yard and pick up their items, not have a shopping cart with them, things of that nature. So you're exactly right in terms of disrupting their flight pattern, if you will.
Some of these challenges also is private property and city property. Perfect example is Home Depot. If they're all on the sidewalk, that's city property, and we'll go ahead and make contact, and we could maybe enforce illegal camping as a municipal code. If they choose to actually lay on the grass, now that becomes private property. And now it's going to have to be us grabbing a hold of the property manager, and hopefully they're willing to sign as a private person's arrest form that maybe we could go that route and do trespassing. Those are the challenges that we have to deal with as well. But again, trespassing dictates you'll give them a warning first before you do anything. So those are the other challenges. And like I said, just because we know he's homeless, but he needs to be doing the criminal act in order for us to go the criminal route. First and foremost, we're going to do engagement, of course. And those are the challenges. You and I know homeless, but we've, like we said, there's nothing against being homeless. Nothing against the law to being homeless.
There's nothing we can do about the drug use that they're doing just because it's personal use or something?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. We do cite for drug use and drug paraphernalia. But obviously our contact is consensual unless we openly see it, and then now we have a legal probable cause reason to go that route. And you know, obviously you'd run them out too and see if they have any warrants, and then that's how we end up taking them to jail. But unless they're openly doing it and we can see it, then yeah, that becomes our probable cause.
The officer has to see it. The outreach people can't just see it, right?
Right. It's a misdemeanor not committed in our presence.
Chief, are you familiar with the gray convertible that stays in our town that is a center for drug sales that also has two prostitutes working out of it? It's been in town now for about 2 years. Have we ever done anything about that?
Are we talking about I think it's a Chrysler convertible?
Yep, that's the
yeah.
One.
Our deputies have made contact and know the individuals well, and it's the same thing. Unless we see it, then we're just going to do a consensual encounter, go make contact with them, and interact with them, get their information, run them out, see if there's anything we see, and go that route to develop any probable cause to actually do anything. There's nothing that we could do. Then they're legally at a park, open to the public, and just like every citizen in Stanton has every right to be at the park, whether sitting at the park or in the parking lot, like I said, unless we have something criminal that's going on that we can enforce, they have every right to be so, just like every other citizen. If it's after hours, then we can go ahead and enforce the media code for being after hours at a park.
Well, I'll give you an example. They were at Stanton Central Park, which really bothers me because of the families there. But recently, they were over here at Stanton Park, and two of our employees were walking by in where the lady was performing a sex act on a male, and it was reported to the department. And the report that I got back was that we were wrong and there was nothing happening there. I'm not real sure that's the kind of response that my city employees need when they're out walking in the park during their lunch break.
Again, something like that needs to be reported to us, and that way we could respond. And if she's willing, the individual who reported it, she actually wants to sign a private person's arrest form for indecent exposure.
Well, why didn't you go out there? I mean, it's like right around the corner or something.
We're always out there, and that's what I'm addressing. Unless we have a legal reason to detain them or to go beyond just an encounter, consensual encounter, I can't go and search his vehicle if I have no probable cause to search your vehicle. I need to have probable cause to search your vehicle. And that would give me the probable cause. If this informant that you speak of chose to actually stick around and chose to actually speak to us and willing to sign a private person's arrest form based on the fact that there was indecent exposure, now we could go ahead and enforce that, whether it's via an arrest, whether it's via a citation, and that vehicle becomes ours too based on the arrest. But if they're just making the complaint to you and by the time it gets to me, no one's around to do anything, then I don't have anything. I have to go there, make contact, and hope that I could develop my own probable cause to be able to go beyond just contacting them.
Yeah, well, my question is, why didn't somebody respond at the initial call?
I don't have that information because I'm not sure the particular day and incident. I can look it up if you have the date and time. I can look that up.
Mr. Taylor and I were out, and that particular car was selling drugs. There was a lady with a syringe shooting up. The two prostitutes were there, and they're parked on the park side. And three of our deputies drove right by him. Didn't even stop, didn't say boo to him. That's well, not being very proactive, and that's not patrolling.
And again, the level of dispatch, the level of call. If they have a call for service that they're responding to, like I just told you, they have a home invasion robbery.
It was a shift change.
Again, I like to look at that to confirm, so that way we could both be on the same page. If you have the date and time, I could definitely look that up. But like I get, like I told you, I wish I had that problem where my deputies do not have nothing else to do, so where they could actually go and make this actually outreach and engagement. But I do have a high call volume, and some of these calls require most of my staff, including the North deputies.
Thank you.
Sue, before you move on, could you, again, kind of my word of the day, could you back one up? Thank you. So if I'm looking at this correctly, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm looking at calls over 8 months, just over 1,000. I guess if we annualize that, it comes to about 1,400 calls or calls are, let's say, 1,400. If you look at enforcement data, there's 15 citations over 3 months. So if you annualize that, that's 60. So that means 5% of calls actually end up in writing a citation. Does that sound right?
Again, most of these calls are driven by the calls for service that we get.
Sure.
And the deputies will dispo the call, whether it's a mental health related or a homeless call, and that's what drives this data.
Okay.
It doesn't always necessitate a citation because they're going there based on whatever it is that they got called there for.
Completely agree. I just want to see how busy you guys are, that's all. Cool. Gotcha. Thank you. Okay.
To the outreach coordinator, there's Annie over on Dale Street across the street from Harry's Cafe. She's been living there for several months, I think 8 or 9 months. Can you tell me what's going on with that? Have you reported her to the Sheriff's Department? Have you offered her services? What's the response?
Yes, so actually with her, she is, from time to time, she is sometimes service reluctant, but every time we've gotten her to get the shelter, she has accepted. We got her to take inside the actual property of the shelter, and she went ahead and set up everything, and we had to figure it out. So, yeah.
Significant mental issues, so that's one of those.
No, I know that. It's a tough situation. Methadone influence on Monroe?
I feel it's heavy. It's definitely a magnet. I think not only does it impact the east end of Monroe, but also the spillover to the tracks, if you would agree with that assessment. From a physical standpoint, the tracks have been better in terms of eliminating the overgrowth that provided concealment for them. But every single morning at the methadone clinic, there's a whole new, I shouldn't say new, there is a cast of characters that, depending, you know, on their level of usage, can be quite problematic. One of the things we see in the area is individuals getting their prescribed dose and then loitering in the area and getting the additional fix that they're looking for. So it's a very problematic area for us, and that's one of the reasons it's indicated on there.
One more quick question. Sheriff, there's a bunch of younger people riding bikes around. I assume that they have a business going on in the city. There's probably 30 or 35 of them. They huddle around the Chrysler to get drugs. They sell drugs to the homeless. They were out panhandling at the In-N-Out Burger line. The guy was taking orders, and they were asking for money. How, as we, an enforcement department with patrol, do we handle people that do that? I know it's not against the law to ride a bike, but it is against the law to sell drugs.
Again, I question how you're getting your information, and that information does not.
Because I'm on the streets every day patrolling.
We'll leave that alone. Because I've seen what you've done, and like I said, I'm sure the rest of the city council member hasn't. So I would question what you do. But again, that information definitely needs to be relayed to us. And as far as the bikes, yeah, we could definitely make contact and, again, go from there and identify these people. If nothing else, we identify who these individuals are.
Hey, Chief, without assuming anything, could you spend 30 seconds on a private person's arrest?
So, for example, if you are a victim of an assault, you know, maybe he punched you, and you decide to call us and you want to file charges against the individual that punched you. It's a misdemeanor because it wasn't a grave bodily injury. So it wasn't committed in my presence. I could not enforce. The only way that I could enforce is based on your behalf. If you're willing to sign this private person's arrest form, which says you will take full liability and go to court and testify, I'll go ahead and arrest them on your behalf, whether that's fully taking them to jail if the situation calls for it, or cite them with a court date and now he's got to go to court. That would be actual you signing that private person's arrest form.
Okay, and suppose the crime didn't happen to me, but I'm seeing a crime in progress. Does that also count?
You could call us and you're the informant. And if, like, again, if we get there and we actually see the crime in progress and we saw it and happen in our presence, if it didn't happen in our presence, then we can't speak on that. We actually need the victim to speak on that. Because sometimes you might have seen it, but the actual victim, when we contact them, does not care to do anything. And that happens a lot. They don't care to do anything. Okay. That's just one example.
Perfect. Thank you.
I could tell you that every law enforcement agency right now is short staff. Every law enforcement agency, to include them, even though they're a private entity, but they're dealing with the same issues as well. The good thing that I could speak on their behalf is, like I said, they're very receptive, and every time that I call, they answer, and everything that I ask for, they deliver. Whether it is us doing the cleanups, they have a contractor, and they'll tell us, yes, we'll set that up. I'll be short on staffing to be able to monitor. Can you guys help me on that end? And sure, collectively, along with Jim Wren, we'll help out. But they're very receptive to us, and I think we have a good relationship with them.
I can echo that. I think the improvements or the efforts that they have committed to related to the actual hardscape have been awesome. They are, and that has improved so much since I first got here. If you look at the areas, the tracks, particularly between Dale and Magnolia, the overgrowth, it actually created almost like a tunnel system, like a complex back there, which was very difficult to manage. It made me nervous over by Walters Elementary School. There's trees. I may or may not have cut down those myself. That being said, they've done a very good job in that regard. What has changed, and I don't think it's any fault of theirs, is that the enforcement component that existed when I first came to Stanton and the methods that they were able to use at that time, I think have been limited by some type of legal action. So when I came here, it was the officers came out, they lined everybody up on the tracks, everybody went to jail, immigration was there. I mean, it was a full show. And my understanding is that capability is no longer there based on the legal ramifications of that.
Well, that was like you and I were in Judge Carter's courtroom, and the impediment is lashing out to UPR and BNSF was loud and clear. That's what I think Mr. Wren was speaking of. He really, again, the same kind of impacts that we're facing and the parameters that we're given was given maybe even harder to UPR. So,
yeah. Did not exist because they're federal, not state. So we looked forward to when they would come on because their level of enforcement, what they were able to do, kind of compared to the constraints that the Sheriff's Department operates under, they had great freedom, and that no longer exists. But generally speaking, I feel they're doing a pretty good job.
So to continue with the homelessness study session, I'd like to have everyone look at our affordable housing. Yes, we have challenges in our outreach and engagement and some of our enforcement, but one of the bright spots is really the housing component of it. And I repeat this now again, I tell Jared, in the middle of a pandemic in the last 2 years, we built 152 permanent supportive housing units. We took advantage of that, the state home key funds, and then of course we have formerly known as Tina Pacific, our Magnolia Crossings. So, and Riviera just has been awarded, and we closed on Tahiti yesterday, and we will be closing on Stanton Inn tomorrow, and you should see active construction going on for the next remainder of this calendar year. And this is really from Mr. Taylor's question. So the Riviera, there are 21 permanent supportive housing units. One of them is a manager's unit. The cost to acquire the property and to rehab it was $546,000, a little over. And you could see the financing that was done through State Home Key, County Jamboree, and City of Stanton. Over $11.4 million went into Riviera for 21 permanent supportive housing units and $13,000 per unit annual cost. This includes all utilities, trash, water, and then of course the management group and the mental or housing or tenancy skills supportive services that's given, and of course the healthcare agency through their mental health services. That concludes the study session presentation.
Question. Cost per unit for the Riviera just is astronomical. Can you compare that to the cost per unit for Stanton?
Similar, if not a little bit more. So that $546,000 in the eyes of some of the counties is a bargain, if you can believe it. This is also purchase and rehab. So this is an all-inclusive price. It's, of course, it's a one-time cost. However, it is the cost of one unit, at least for Riviera. I've heard in County of LA, it's $800,000 per unit, but for us. And again, this is an existing building that they're just rehabbing.
I think they're taking it down to the studs or something, though. I mean, for this kind of money.
Well, we hope so.
Well, nice work, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, the recommended action on this is that the City Council find this item is not subject to California Environmental Quality Act, CEQA. And this is a receive and file. Thank you. Public comment on closed session items at 5 o'clock. Are we there yet?
We are there, 5:02 p.m. The only written communications that we did receive is right before you for that homeless study session item. For closed session at 5 p.m., we have none.
Okay, is there anyone on the audience who would like to speak about our closed session item coming up, which is a conference with real property negotiators, public employee performance evaluation, and that's about it, right? Those two. Or you have a special thing, right? Go ahead.
I do. Thank you, Mayor and Council. There's a provision in the Brown Act that allows the City Council to add agenda items to an already published agenda if that issue came up after the agenda posted. That's Government Code Section 54954.2. There has been an issue that arose following the agenda posting that, as legal counsel, I'm recommending the council go to a closed session. It would be public employee performance evaluation pursuant to Government Code Section 54957. The evaluation would be of the city manager. Additionally, I'm recommending conference with labor negotiators pursuant to Government Code Section 54957.6 with our designated representative, the mayor, and the unrepresented employee, the city manager. If the council desired to bring this into closed session as recommended, we would need a four-fifths vote of the council.
Any questions? I'll move the action.
Second.
Roll call, Madam Clerk.
Motion by Mayor Shaver, second by Member Van. I'll now proceed with roll call vote. Councilmember Taylor?
Yes.
Councilmember Warren?
Yep.
Councilmember Van?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Ramirez?
Yes.
And Mayor Shaver?
Yes.
Thank you.
I guess we're ready to go into closed session.
Okay.
We'll be back.
Council will proceed into closed session at 5:04 p.m.
Are we recording?
Yes, sir, we are.
Thank you. All right, we just returned from a closed session. Is there anything to report out?
Thank you, Mayor and Council. There's nothing to report.
Thank you. Roll call, Madam Clerk.
Council Agency Authority Member Taylor?
Here.
Council Agency Authority Member Warren?
Here.
Council Agency Authority Member Van?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Vice Chairman Ramirez?
Here.
And Mayor Chairman Shawver?
Here. If you'll all please join me in a pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, at this time we have a special presentation and award. We are declaring the month of April as the DMV Donate Life Month in the city of Stanton. And this evening we have with us Ms. Linda Trachman, a One Legacy Ambassador and recipient. Come on up, young lady.
Very interesting because I just watched Shark Tank a couple of weeks ago and they had something like this called the nightcap. You put it over your drink and put the straw through and nobody put powder into your drink. Mm-hmm. We knew we were going to have to. Anyhow, hi, I'm Linda Trachman. I live in Fullerton and I'm just going to share a little story about why I had a liver transplant. I, in the process of trying to have a baby, my husband and I needed to do artificial insemination. We were successful, and we have a 33-year-old. We found out when she was a year and a half old that one of the donors, sperm donors, died of AIDS. And I found out when she was a year and a half old that I was HIV positive. And that attacked my liver. I was misdiagnosed for 6 years as non-A, non-B viral hepatitis, hep C, but I found out I'm negative for all the hepatitis. So it attacked my liver, and I'm one of the first, I am the first woman in the world to have a live donor transplant. My niece gave me 60% of her liver, because your liver is one organ that regrows. Instead of having two lobes, we have one big lobe. She was grown in 5 weeks, I was grown in 6 weeks, and she went back up to British Columbia to do 12 billable hours a day as an attorney, and she had been interning when they called us at Mount Sinai in New York to have the transplant. And I'm a physical therapist. I had 40 employees for 27 years in the healthcare field, and you know, things happen and you gotta make lemonade. That's all I can tell you. I was very blessed that my daughter was negative, and my husband's negative, and transmission woman to man is 6 times as hard as man to woman. So I feel blessed because I don't think I could have really lived with that. In fact, she's getting married May 7th. So this year I walked in the Rose Parade, they honored me. And the press didn't have it exactly right. They thought it was just recipient donors that were walking. But I and another gal who had a heart transplant, we walked 6.5 miles, weren't riding. And, you know, I had done a 5K, which is 3.3 miles, but I've never walked 6.5. So it was a great accomplishment. And I'm very insatiable about life. Even more so now, and I appreciate every moment. There's 120,000 people waiting for transplant, and about 25% don't get one. And with my diagnosis, and it's getting better and better, but that was like a scarlet letter, and I certainly was not going to be at the top of this a liver that comes through cadaveric. So, I wrote an anonymous letter for USC because I treated with the chief of hematology there, Alexandra Mary Levine, for many years, became medical director of the City of Hope. I wrote an anonymous letter, and that letter alone raised $180,000 because for the grace of God, go I. I mean, things happen, and I was a perfect candidate for them to give me a liver transplant because I reached into a lot of different communities. And, you know, back then, we thought it was all, you know, in a homosexual community or whatever, and we're all in this fight together. We just didn't realize it. So this is my story, and we are short of livers. I am actually an organ donor now. The law changed, and so should I pass away in a certain way where I was brain dead, my liver would go to another HIV. So I'm open to any questions you have, and I am so honored that you guys are taking this for the City of Stanton to honor and be involved with One Legacy.
Yeah, thank you very much for coming out today. I'm going to read this resolution, then we're going to present it to you, because we do want to support you in our community. So on this particular day, we are going to recognize the National Donate Light Month of April 2020. It's actually the DMV Donate Light Month through the City of Stanton. In doing so, we're going to encourage all Californians to check yes on their license plate, okay, when applying or renewing their driver's license, identification card, etc. And by signing that, it will enable somebody to receive whatever they need to keep their life going on. Also, you can go to www.donatelifecalifornia.org and sign up. Okay? And again, thank you. Let's all join us down here. Come on up. I will meet you down there. Let's go, Counselor. Okay, we're now on item 14, the consent calendar. Madam Clerk, do we receive any correspondence or requests for anybody to speak on our consent calendar items?
Mr. Mayor, I have none.
Thank you. We need a motion then. We can do it singly, A through I.
I'll move it.
Yeah, second.
Okay. Roll call, Madam Clerk.
Confirming, correct me if I'm wrong. I heard a smaller one before Ramirez, but I have a motion by Councilmember Taylor, a second by Mayor Pro Tem Ramirez. I will now proceed with roll call vote. Council Agency Authority Member Taylor?
Yes.
Council Agency Authority Member Van?
Yes.
Council Agency Authority Member Warren?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Vice Chairman Ramirez?
Yes.
And Mayor Chairman Shaver.
Thank you. That ends our consent calendar. We have no public hearings, no unfinished business, new business approval of lease for two automatic license plate recognition cameras from the flock.
And that will be Ms.
Go ahead, Mr. Ames.
Good evening.
Mayor and council members. Before you tonight is an item to approve the lease of two additional automatic license plate cameras from Flock Safety. The cameras are intended to be installed on Village Center Drive, so the action item is to approve those additional cameras at a cost of $6,300 for the initial year, and I believe $5,600 for every year after that. I don't know what questions you may have, but I'm happy to take your questions.
Go ahead, Mr. Taylor.
Just, do they just read the license plate numbers?
To my knowledge, yes, they do.
And do we have any, I assume the ones we've got on Beach Boulevard and all that are working well?
To my knowledge, they are. Flock actually sends out daily emails to myself updating me on the status of any cameras that need maintenance or any plans that they have for maintenance. So they've been very good about that.
Any other questions? Okay, I think they've been very effective, so I'm going to go ahead and make a motion.
Second.
Madam Clerk, please call roll.
Roll call is not needed at this time. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none, Mr. Mayor, the item does pass 5-0.
17B, this is approval to share Flock camera information with other law enforcement agencies.
That is also Mr. Ames again.
Thank you. This item is concerning information sharing with other law enforcement agencies regarding Flock information gathered. It was determined jointly by County of Orange County Council and the city attorney that because the city entered into an agreement with Flock for the system that we need to provide approval for each and every law enforcement agency that requests information from the city to be able to access the Flock system. The Sheriff's Department would greatly like to be able to provide that access, but we need to authorize that access. So this item tonight is to approve a template sharing agreement, information sharing agreement that would be executed with each and every agency that requests data from Flock, and it would authorize the city manager, subject to his final review, to execute those agreements. So we're seeking your permission tonight to basically share information with other law enforcement agencies to aid in their investigations of criminal activity in the area. And city staff supports this item.
Yes, go ahead, Carol.
Do any other cities have Flock systems that we get data from?
This is a good question. I'm going to ask our Sheriff's Department if they have any information regarding that.
Give it to me, sir.
As far as our 13 contract cities currently for our city, there's ourselves, Livingston Hills, and Lake Forest that currently have the Flock system. Now, obviously, the rest of the cities are looking to get it based on the fact that how much it's helped us in investigative leads. As far as the other cities, every city has that locally around us. For example, it's Los Alamitos has it, Winter Park has it. They reached out to us to share, and what that means is they share the data, and vice versa. We'll get to use their data. If a crime happens here and we believe that maybe it came from the Buena Park area, we could have access to their cameras and look at if there's any investigative leads that may use. But this will allow for city manager to approve us sharing that data with them, and vice versa, they'll reciprocate and we'll be able to share that.
Mr. Ames, are we getting an adjustment with our, are we getting get contract credit for doing this with the Sheriff's Department? Or is this free? I was just asking.
It's fair.
I'm not sure I understand the question.
No, it's free. Consider it, you know, mutual aid or something. So if a neighboring city needs help, this data is there to help them, and vice versa.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Okay. Anybody like to make a motion on this?
I'll move it.
Second.
Okay, and that will be for items 1, 2, and 3. Madam Clerk.
We have a motion by Councilmember Taylor, a second by Mayor Pro Tem Ramirez. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, Mr. Mayor, the item passes 5-0.
Thank you. We're moving into oral communications with the public. This time, the public may address the city, council, successor agency, Stanton Housing Authority on any item within our subject matter jurisdiction, provided that no action may be taken. Has anybody requested speaking?
No request to speak cards have been received.
Okay, I'm going to open it. Is there anybody who would like to address us? Okay.
Miss Esther.
Come on
Rosa
up, please. Sorry. And where in Stanton is your concern? Thank you for that. That gives us an idea.
Yes.
Okay, appreciate it. Thank you. Is there anyone else that would wish to speak? Okay. Close the public hearing. Written communications, we have none. Mayor, chairman, council initiated business. Committee reports, our authority announcements. I guess you're going to tell us about our Easter egg hunt later, right? Is any okay? 20B for future meeting. Okay, future study session. Anything from our esteemed attorney?
I have nothing to report. Thank you.
Okay. From our manager, executive director.
Yes, sir. One item before we get to the egg hunt. We'd like to invite everybody out to Magnolia Crossing for a community meeting Tuesday, April 19th. So next Tuesday, 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. This is an informational meeting regarding the proposed Magnolia Crossing project. This is an effort to bring affordable rental apartments and for sale townhomes to the Tina Pacific neighborhood. We'd like to introduce everybody to the team, city staff, CNC Development, Brandywine, and National Corps to provide an overview of the proposed community and answer any questions that they might have. So pencil that in for Tuesday, April 19th.
5:30 to 6:30 p.m. and food and drinks will be provided. With that, the egg hunt. Community Services Director Senya Bobadilla.
Good evening, Mayor, members of the City Council. We are excited to finally bring back our egg hunts after our last one in 2019. So we are expecting quite a big crowd, bringing out a few extra amenities this year. So we're starting from 9 to 11 this Saturday at Stanton Central Park. We have about 20 partners that will share some goodies, some resources. We're also tying in our Blue Ribbon Walk this year that highlights child abuse prevention. We have a couple different groups coming out and sharing resources and donating some goodies. Our Easter Bunny will be celebrating 25 years as Stanton's Easter Bunny. So she's thrilled. And we are excited to have her. All the lucky kids that find a golden ticket in their eggs during the hunt that kicks off at 10 a.m. will get a special surprise donated by the Stanton Community Foundation and the Stanton Lions Club. I'm happy to have any council members that are willing to pass out those Easter baskets. Egg hunts start promptly at 10 a.m. And as you know, it is quite a quick scramble. So we are excited and happy to have anybody in attendance. Thank you.
Any announcements? Okay, also on Saturday, after you get your chocolate Easter eggs, you can stop by Stanton Park. We're having a big food drive. The diapers, I think I'm getting about 40,000 diapers. So we have diapers and we have food, and it's a pre-Easter food giveaway. So if anybody wants to come out and help, Gary, you're welcome to come.
Do you have adult diapers?
Gary, if you would like for me to hunt some up, I'd be more than happy to do that.
For a friend.
Oh, that's more than I wanted to answer. I'm sorry. Okay, let's move on then. Any other announcements? Okay, great. Okay, we are now at, oh yes, the Fire Authority. And we do have a new division chief. And his name is Steve Doman. And welcome, Chief. Is this your first meeting?
This is my first meeting, yes, sir.
Okay, we'll give you your Stanton pin before you leave then.
Perfect.
Depending on how good your report is. Go ahead.
All right. Well, with that, good evening, Mayor Mayor Shaver, Mayor Pro Tem Ramirez, Council Members Van, Warren, Taylor, and city staff. First of all, I'd like to have a chance to introduce myself, tell you a little bit about me and my career with the Orange County Fire Authority, and I'll get into my report. Unfortunately, due to the short transition of my promotion and Chief Petro's retirement, we didn't have an opportunity to do like a little succession planning of introductions and shadowing. So I was quickly being brought up to speed by meeting Chief Petro off duty post-retirement. So I was thankful he, even after he retired from the agency, he was willing to meet me on his own time. My name is Steve Doman. I was recently promoted to a division chief on April 8th. And I'm serving as your local fire chief as a Division 7 division chief. A little bit about me, I began my career in the fire service in February of 93 with the city of San Clemente, serving on their local ambulance. In September of 94, I came over to the Orange County Fire Department at the time with the transition, and I was hired by the Fire Authority as a firefighter in May of 97. For the past 25 years, I have served the Orange County Fire Authority, promoted through numerous ranks, and served on various committees and work groups. I've worked as a firefighter, firefighter paramedic, fire captain, fire investigator, an administrative captain, field battalion chief, and most recently I served as the battalion chief overseeing the urban search and rescue program as their program manager, where I served for 3.5 years. For more than 15 years of my career, I've also served on incident management teams and our urban search and rescue program. I've deployed across the United States for suppression of wildfires with management teams, and as well as across the country, and also to Puerto Rico and Hawaii with FEMA Urban Search and Rescue on their incident support teams responding to mudslides, wildfires, hurricanes, earthquakes, and most recently was part of the Orange County vaccination pods that we established in January of 2021. I know I have some big shoes to fill behind Chief Petro and his retirement. I look forward, though, to serving in my new role as your local fire chief and building collaborative relationships working with the city council members and city staff. And with that, I thank you for allowing me the opportunity to introduce myself. It is my pleasure to be here today representing the Orange County Fire Authority and providing you an update. This is an operational report from March of 2022. During the month of March 2022, we had a total of 352 incidents here within the city of Stanton. 16 of those were classified as fires. Approximately 319 were EMS rescue, and 17 were as hazardous conditions and miscellaneous service calls. There was also 43 incidents in the Stanton unincorporated area, one of those being a fire, 41 EMS rescues, and one hazardous condition. We had two significant fires in the city within March 2022. On March 10th, at about 08:50 hours in the morning, there was a structure fire at a commercial property apartment building at 8861 Pacific Avenue in the city of Stanton. Initial crews reported there is an exterior fire that has spread to the interior. Crews made a quick knockdown, and the fire damage was reported to approximately $50,000 to the structure and zero to the contents. At the time of the report, the fire is under investigation, and there is no civilian or firefighter injuries at that fire. On March 13th, a couple days later, at 08:34 in the morning, there was another structure fire reported at 10,600 Western Avenue. Initial crews reported there's smoke showing from the back of the building. This was an apartment building. Crews discovered a fire that started in the kitchen of an apartment, and they were able to contain the fire to that kitchen with some smoke damage. The cause of that fire was determined to be unattended candles being utilized in the house. And there's no civilian or firefighter injuries reported at that fire, and damage was reported to be approximately $100,000 to the structure and $50,000 to the contents. In March of 29th, Tuesday, March 29th, Educate and Carmen Cardenas conducted a bilingual English-Spanish fire safety presentation to the Stanton Community Center. As far as some miscellaneous issues going on in the fire authority, on May 6th, I'm sad to see that Battalion Chief Chad Grimmel, who's stationed Battalion 8C shift, is going to be moving down to Battalion 6 down to Dana Point. But with that, we're going to be receiving Battalion Chief Mark Moore coming from the city, Battalion 2 Yorba Linda, who's going to be coming to A shift of Battalion 8. Recently, there's been a Division Chief TJ McGovern was promoted to Assistant Chief of Operations behind retired Operations Chief Phil Johnson. Besides my promotion on April 8th, Battalion Chief Tim Perkins and Battalion Chief Mike Summers were also promoted to Division Chief. And then just recently, six fire captains were promoted to Battalion Chief and are currently in the BC Academy, and we expect to see them into the field on May 6th. Currently, we don't have any members from the Orange County Fire Authority deployed outside of Orange County supporting any wildfires or any large incidents. And then this, for the month of April, our community education department's going to be focusing on three primary messages of water safety around pools. We also have our drowning prevention proclamations coming out here in May, barbecue safety, and home assessment messages as far as having a fire in the house or also a wildfire with the Ready, Set, Go program. Upcoming in May 14th and 15th, we're going to be having again our Orange County Fire Authority Girls Empowerment Camp. That'll be hosted at our Orange County Fire Authority headquarters there in Irvine, and that's going to run from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. And this is a great opportunity for outreach into the communities to females as far as to kind of educate them and expose them to the fire service and the potential for a career. It's primarily it's open for actually boys and girls, and it's focused at ages between 14 and 18 year olds. Like I said, it's an opportunity to a community outreach to expose them to the fire service. We have opportunities and demonstrations there where they actually get to dress up in gear, utilize some of the tools and equipment, and kind of experience what it's like to be a day in the life of the firefighter. This concludes my report for the Orange County Fire Authority, and I'm available for any questions. Thank you.
Any questions? Okay. Chief, thank you for that. You did such a stellar job that you get a Stanton pin for your uniform and one for your dress uniform.
Ooh, thank you.
It's on its way down. Anyway, let's give him a big hand. Welcome to Stanton. Okay, if we have no other business before the council at this time, we will adjourn to our next regular scheduled meeting, which is my birthday, April the 26th. I'll be 33. And we'll have cake and cookies, I promise. Anyway, good night. Have a great weekend coming up. And happy Easter.